If you know anyone who went to college and is under the age of 35 or so, chances are that you've heard them talk about trying to pay off their student loans. And that's not a surprise, considering that according to the Institute for College Access and Success, 70% of Wisconsin college graduates in 2015 graduated with an average of almost $30,000 in student loan debt. Our guest argues that student loan debt doesn't just affect recent graduates, it hurts the U.S. economy as a whole. Sheila C. Baer is the president of Washington College in Chestertown, Maryland. She's also a former chairwoman of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. She recently wrote an opinion piece for the New York Times called "To Boost the Economy, Help Students First." The article is linked on the Central Time Facebook page. Sheila, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Sheila, how serious is the student debt crisis in the U.S.?
Well, I think it's pretty serious. It's certainly serious on an individual student borrower level. A lot of students are struggling with payments they cannot afford. And it also is a macroeconomic problem. We have $1.3 trillion of outstanding student debt right now. The payments are significant when students graduate. It's money that they spend paying down their debt, so they're not spending it on, buying a car, other consumer goods. They delay buying a home. There's a really good study by the Philadelphia Federal Reserve showing that this has hurt small business formation because young student graduate entrepreneurs who used to go graduate from college and start a business, borrow some money and start a business, they're not doing that anymore. They're taking these nice, safe corporate jobs so that they'll have steady paychecks to pay down their student debt. So all those things have a negative impact on our economy. So it really is a problem that impacts all of us directly or indirectly.
As a college president, what are the most outstanding problems that you see associated with this kind of student loan debt and who it impacts the most?
Well, there's a lot of interesting research on that, and there's a fairly large segment of the student borrower population, and I think this is really tragic. They haven't borrowed huge amounts, around $10,000. That's still a lot of money, but they never graduate. So typically, these are students who have gone to for-profit schools or community colleges. They've run up student debt tabs. They haven't completed a degree, or they've gone to a school where the degree doesn't really help them get a job. And so, and these tend to be lower income students to begin with, students who will not have families who will be able to help them pay off this debt. So that's a big segment. There are also students on the other end who've run up very large amounts, and we've read those tragic stories. However, most of the students that have the very large student debt loads are those students who have gone to graduate schools, professional schools, and actually are higher earners and are able to service the debt. And this has actually been a problem with some of the debt relief programs that have been around now, is that they're really geared towards helping those who have borrowed a lot of money, and those aren't really always the students who need the help the most. It's really the lower-income students who have not perhaps borrowed huge sums, but have borrowed more than they can afford to pay back and are not getting as much relief as those who have gone on to graduate professional schools and really have a high earnings capability.
Now, this is something that has changed, gotten progressively worse in the last, say, 15 years, 20 years or so. Why do you think it has been such a snowballing issue?
Well, I think there are a lot of factors. I think the government had good intentions in making student loans widely available, but they really there wasn't good execution. I think if we want to provide financing for higher education, we want to make that widely available. You really don't want to use a debt model. I mean, in a way, you're extending. We almost have what in banking we would call reverse underwriting. So the lower income students, the first generation students, those are the students we really want to help. We want to help them get that college degree and help them move up the rung of the economic ladder. But they probably will not be, in terms of the having capability to pay the loan back, they may be higher risk than those who come from wealthier families. So by gearing the debt to low-income students, We're providing help to those who we want to help, but we're doing it in a way that's not really conducive to their interest. This is why I've suggested that we shift to an equity model, what I call an equity model instead of a debt model, where if we want to make financing of higher education widely available to everybody, meaning we're not going to underwrite, we're not going to get out our green eye shades and figure out, you know, will you have the capacity to pay this back when you graduate? If we want to make it widely available, because it's hard to know when a student enters college whether they will, you know, what their future will hold, let's use an equity model instead of a debt model so that when they graduate, their obligation to taxpayers is to return some percentage of their income, over a low percentage, over an extended period of time. And I think that really reflects, that's an investment. That's not a loan, that's an investment. And that's really what we want to do for our young people. We're investing in their future, and we're not doing it just for them. We're doing it for the labor needs of our economy. And, you know, we need policemen. We need math high school teachers. There are a lot of people who we need in our labor force who will not be making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, but they're going into to noble professions, the nonprofit sector, and we want to be able to finance their ability to get a four-year degree as well. So going into income shares, so you're paying a percentage of your income as opposed to a flat dollar amount, I think works better if what we want to do is make financing broadly available, and I think that is what we want to do. So it's really an investment. It's an investment in our young people. It's an investment in our economy and the labor force needs of our economy. And I think that kind of model works better than debt, which is very rigid. You pay that fixed dollar amount back and a fixed monthly payment with interest. And even now, another problem with some of the debt forgiveness programs we have is that they have a taxable event. Even when you do provide some relief, it's a taxable event with equity. Income share agreements are a relatively new phenomenon, so some of the legal rules are not quite worked out yet. But typically, with an equity investment, there's no any kind of lower payment coming from a lower income earnings capability once you graduate would not be taxable the way debt forgiveness would be taxable. So I think on a lot of levels it works much, much better than debt. And I was actually very pleased that President Trump in a speech in Ohio had mentioned going to some type of income share program to replace all this distressed student debt we have now, and I hope he follows through with that. I think it'd be very good for students as well as for the economy.
We're talking right now with Sheila Baer, president of Washington College in Chestertown, Maryland, talking about her new proposal, sort of equity investment for student loan debt. And you mentioned that this would be a very low percentage of the income, but for an extended period of time.
Right.
Do you think that that extended period of time is a possible difficulty with this model, that this is something that a student could end up paying, I don't know, maybe their entire life if it's quite low?
Well, yeah. So that's a really good question. And I think I would say that I think you should always have the ability to prepay it. So I think actually Jeb Bush had an income share proposal when he was running in the primary. This is an idea that crosses party lines and ideological lines. I think he had suggested 1% for every $10,000 that you borrow, up to a cap of $50,000. I think you also need some common sense caps in terms of how much taxpayers are going to be financing. So you'd have a maximum of 5% of your income. I believe it was spread out over a 25-year time period, with a cap of 1.75 times whatever your dollar amount was financed. So what this actually does, you can prepay it anytime you want, but what this actually does is give earnings relief so that in later years when a graduate's income level goes up, right? When you're right after you graduate from college, you're maybe going to be making $40,000-$45,000 a year. I think $45,000 is about the mean for college, 4-year college graduates. You're going to have a lot of expenses. You're not going to have any savings built up. To have a 10-year amortized loan, which is going to be probably about $300-$350 a month, if you're lucky, is probably going to be a stretch for you. But having a much lower percentage of your income, but spread out over a much longer period of time, will actually give you some breathing room. So later on, when you have a higher earnings potential, that's when you can make your higher payments and fulfill your obligation to taxpayers. So I actually think having it over a longer period of time is a plus for students, not a negative. And if you build it into the tax withholding system too, then it's pretty much automatic. Just key it off people's adjusted gross income and their tax return. Have it part as your tax withholding. Again, it's a very low percentage, and it will produce steady returns for taxpayers. And taxpayers should get some return on their investment. But again, in a way that will allow students to benefit from their later years as their careers have matured and they're having higher earnings and trying to pay back larger payments early on right after they graduated.
Let's take a caller now. We have John joining us in Milwaukee. John, hi.
Hi there. Thanks for this topic. I find the problem of college tuition to be profoundly problematic because it's so expensive. There's no accountability. These kids are going in to get four-year degrees, and they come out and they can barely get jobs. And you've got these tenured professors. I know a bunch of professors that are retired at 60, and they're living a golden retirement. And talk about one percenters. We're talking about tenured professors and people immune to the economy that work and live in these university environments that are completely removed from the real world. And you've got these kids, the government, sure, they're going to loan the money out. They're going to loan the money out, but it's basically sending dump trucks to the universities with tax dollars, because in the middle is the students that are getting, you know, really, really, it's a not good situation for them. And I just said no one's advocating for students, and you can do all these schemes that your guest is talking about, all these things around the margins, but the big problem is it's gotten way too expensive. It's outrun inflation by several times, and no one's doing anything about it, and they're just building these gigantic buildings and all these incredible stuff. And
I think I got you, John, and I want to get our guest in on this. Sheila, what do you say to that? That this is really, you know, you're nibbling, I guess, kind of at the edges is what John is saying, and then the real problem is the cost of college.
Yeah. Well, I think I would agree that cost is a factor, and we all need to do a better job of holding the line on cost. I would say that I think, you know, that the bulk of the student loan distress, the defaults, is with the for-profit schools and community colleges. That's where the default rates are the highest. If you look at those attending four-year colleges, your default rates are lower there, especially with private four-year schools. So I do think, in terms of, we want to make sure that students are getting value, four-year colleges do have a pretty good track record if you're looking at loan repayment rates. That said, everybody needs to do a better job of holding the line on cost. And I also, think there should be what we call risk retention in the financial world, meaning that if, you know, large numbers of students are not paying back their obligation to taxpayers, that colleges themselves should have to absorb some of that. So I do think that would get colleges better focused on their public responsibilities, making sure that their students are getting a good education, are graduating, are getting good jobs where they can repay their obligations to society for financing their higher education to begin with. So I do agree with some of what the caller says. I do think there's a lot of hyperbole around this, though, as well. And yes, has tuition gone up too much too fast? Yes, it has. We've frozen tuition. We just transitioned to a four-year tuition model. So when you enter college here at Washington College, your tuition is set for 4 years. It will not go up on you. And we've instituted a number of budget-saving measures, a de facto freeze on non-faculty hiring. We carefully look at any job openings and make sure that we need to fill those jobs. We prioritize philanthropy towards scholarship.
We're talking with Sheila Bair right now. She's president of Washington College in Chestertown, Maryland, and she recently wrote an opinion piece for the New York Times that's called "To Boost the Economy, Help Students First," and that article is linked on the Central Time Facebook page. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you think that college debt repayment should be based on how much someone earns after graduation, this plan we're hearing about? Should the government be a primary holder of student debt? And how has student debt impacted your life? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're talking about the student debt crisis, and one way to fix what our guest thinks is a broken system that's hurting the economy. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What do you think of Sheila Bair's idea of tying the amount due to earning power after graduation? Are you struggling to pay off your student loans? What has it meant for you in terms of being able to get ahead after graduation? If you're a parent, how different is it for your kids than maybe it was for you? You can call us at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. And right now we're picking up that conversation with Sheila Bair. She's president of Washington College in Chestertown, Maryland. And we'll take our next call. We've got Paul joining us in Green Bay. Paul, hi.
Yeah, hi. I'm a first one in my family tree to go to college, went to graduate school, started working inner city schools where you don't make any money at all or to speak of. And I got decent benefits, and then I moved to Wisconsin, and after Act 10, I've got no benefits. I pay more for insurance than I would normally. But I paid my student loan off, and I was extremely pragmatic when I got into graduate school because I knew that the vocation I was going into didn't pay a lot of money. So, you know, as someone that did pay his debt, I am kind of, I don't know if resentful is the right word, but it's like, what about those of us that do pay our student loan bills?
Well, Paul, can I just briefly ask you, you said you were very pragmatic. What did you do to keep debt under control? Oh, we lost him. That's too bad. Well, let's talk about what he brought up, that it is possible, Sheila, to take control of your debt and not to graduate with a lot of debt. And I do want to say in Wisconsin, as we said earlier, 70% of college students do graduate with debt to the tune of about $30,000. So Paul is a little unique in that sense. But what do you say to that?
Well, I think I congratulate him for paying off his loans, and I want to emphasize that an income share agreement, you're still paying taxpayers back. You're still providing return. It's just you're doing it in a way that's going to provide a more affordable payment. And I think someone just like this gentleman is exactly the kind of person ISAs would help the most. We want talented, you know, teachers going into inner city schools, teaching math, teaching science, teaching English history. We want that. We want to reward that. But given the income, you know, what they're, that average of $30,000 getting a 4-year degree and the payment they're going to have to be making with the standard 10-year loan is probably going to strap them given the income that they're going to be making. So having income share, they're still paying back, but they're doing a smaller amount geared towards their income over a longer period of time. So nobody's getting off the hook. It's just a different way of making your return on that investment that taxpayers have made on you. So I congratulate him. He's exactly the kind of person I have in mind in advocating for income share because I do want to encourage, I want to finance the education of those kinds of committed people who are going to inner city schools and teaching. I want to make sure they have an affordable payment that's not going to strap them. And that's exactly the kind of graduate I think could really benefit from an income share arrangement.
Well, thanks a lot for that call. And we're going to go next to Jane in Menominee. Hi, Jane.
Hi. See, I just want to mention a couple things. I'm a high school counselor, and so I see this frequently, kids wondering how they're going to pay for college. I have 3 children of my own. One went to law school and has a ton of loans but makes a huge salary. I have a daughter who started at UW-Milwaukee, and because of the shortage of clinical instructors, after 2 years, said, well, you can come back and just, you know, continue to take classes so you can get into your clinicals. And she said, no way, I'm transferring to CBTC, and I'll get a nursing degree at CBTC at the technical college for a fraction of the price. She'll end up with no loans. And then I have a daughter who's going to be graduating this year and looking at engineering at UW-Madison. And when hopefully if she gets in there and goes there, she'll have no problem paying off, you know, some of her debt that she acquires. But I would agree that I think that it depends on what you're going into. And you know, I would have to disagree with the man who spoke prior about the university professors getting paid too much money. They live pretty conservatively so that by the time they are 60 years old, you know, they've lived conservatively so they can have a retirement. So I don't want to blame it all on the university pay scale because if a teacher can go, you know, we're losing a ton of teachers to industry because of the fact that they can make so much more money. So I don't think we need to pay our teachers less, but I do think that there needs to be some common sense amongst the university and the students. Students sometimes take that loan money and they go and buy things with it.
Jane, thanks so much for the call and the comments there. And Sheila, what do you think about about her comments there about some alternatives. Well, it doesn't have to be a, you know, a four-year private school, for instance.
Right. Well, I think we want choice. We want, you know, a hallmark of the American higher education system is having a rich choice, whether it's a liberal arts college, whether it's a technical vocational school, whether it's a large public university, a large research university. You know, different students respond to different type of educational environments, and I think we want choice. And so income share is basically neutral in terms of the type of college, type of higher education that you choose. It's just that you're packed with taxpayer-backed financing, the compact you would make, as opposed to making a fixed debt repayment, you would make commit to making a percentage of your income paying that back to taxpayers. So, and I do think in terms of her children and the diversity of careers and income capacity that they have chosen, again, would benefit from this because the payment's going to be calibrated to what they make. And it's always going to be an affordable percentage versus a fixed debt amount. So I do think, and I appreciate the comments she also made about faculty pay. Again, I think there are some foils here on the increases in tuition, which I agree have been too high, and all college administrators need to do a better job on holding the line. But I don't know that faculty pay is a particular culprit. I do think everybody needs to be smarter and more prudent about how they budget. I think philanthropy needs to support scholarships. That should be first and foremost. Again, people need buildings too. I don't want to suggest that you don't. You need facilities, obviously, to carry out a good quality education. But the best use, in my view, for philanthropy is scholarships to give. That's another alternative to debt is scholarship funding. So I do think there are things that have been driving this that are not related to faculty pay. And actually, I would make faculty pay pretty low on my list in terms of what's been driving tuition increases. Most studies have shown it's administrative costs and construction. And that's really where we need to get smarter.
And we leave it there. Sheila, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Sheila C. Bear is the president of Washington College in Chestertown, Maryland. She recently wrote an opinion piece for the New York Times. It's called "To Boost the Economy, Help Students First." And that article is linked over on the Central Time Facebook page. You can keep that conversation going. Go to the Central Time Facebook page. Let us know how college debt has affected your children or your life.